Time Studios, underwritten in part by Sputnik Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us is Steve Keen, Professor Steve Keen, a friend of the show, the head of the School of Economics, Politics, and History at Kingston University in London, in the UK. Website debtdeflation.com/blogs and ideaeconomics.org. You can tweet him at Prof. Steve, S-T-E-V-E, Keen, K-E-E-N, P-R-O-F, Steve Keen. And Professor Steve Keen, welcome back to the program.
Great to be talking to you again, Tom.
It is always such a pleasure to have you with us. I wanted to talk with you about the consequences, the meaning of negative interest rates. Donald Trump came out earlier in the week and said we've got this artificial economy. Well, many of us have been saying this for a long, long time, but not that it's artificial, but that it's bizarre, that something's going on that hasn't happened since the Sumerian Empire 7,000 years ago, negative interest rates. Or do I have that wrong?
No, you don't have it wrong. It's there's actually been momentary bursts of negative rates on occasions in the Japanese bond market in the last 10 or 20 years because the rates have been close to zero for so long, and little changes in interest supply and demand flows of bond purchases could cause it. But this is the first time I've had systematic negative rates across the world, and in the case of, say, the Swiss central bank, which seems to be the most extreme of the central banks implementing this policy right now, they've got a rate of minus 0.75%, and that's not chicken feed when you're talking about having reserve bank central bank accounts of the private banks at central banks, which is where these negative rates are imposed, which are the accounts are valued in the tens of billions of dollars, and I mean, in the case of American accounts, they're in the trillions of dollars. So it's a very large figure.
Now, the conventional wisdom, I remember back in the 70s when interest rates were so high, and the early 80s when Paul Volcker was jacking up the U.S. interest rates in response, I guess, to the oil embargo that spiked inflation in the United States. And correct me if I'm factually wrong on any of this. That we had high interest rates. I remember Louise's grandmother was retired. She was in her 70s at that time. And that she had some CDs. They sold the farm. They had a family, you know, 100-acre family farm in Michigan. And she was living off the interest from these CDs because they were paying 13-14%, you know, and she was doing quite well. And presumably wealthy people who had money were doing well. But on the flip side of that, people who had credit cards, for example, that had been topped out at 10% by law until Richard Nixon lifted the usury laws here in the United States in 71, I think it was, those credit card interest rates started creeping up to 15%, 16%, and like that. But now you would think with negative interest rates that people should be able to borrow for 1%, 2%, 3%, or 4%, but credit cards are charging 29% in the United States. And you would think that, what happens, and what happens to, for example, retired people who are trying to live off their savings when there's no way that they can get any kind of return on that, their investment? What are the real world meanings of this, and why is it not predictable? Why is it not consequential? Why is it the banks can borrow at a 0.5% and yet they're loaning out money at 29%?
Well, actually, I've got to back up a fair bit there, Tom, because the reality of negative interest rates has got almost nothing to do with the real world. It's because the conventional economists who run central banks do not know how capitalism functions, are applying models that have got nothing to do with the real world, and are now completely floundering with absolutely stupid policies like negative interest rates in the belief this will cause banks to lend more money, which is just insanely wrong. So we have to really back up and say what the hell's going on here. And by the way, I could be not actually stating my own views here. I could be citing the views of the chief economist of the World Bank, because Paul Romer, who's recently been appointed the chief economist of the World Bank and a leading mainstream economist, a major contributor to growth theory in a whole lot of areas, he's come out saying macroeconomists haven't got a clue how the world functions. In a very recent paper, I highly recommend people to read. It just came out a couple of days ago. But just to go back to where the negative rates have come from, the main source of them, there's a couple of tiny cases where this happened for market reasons, as I gave the example of Japan a moment ago. But the main reason why it's happening is that central banks have enormous reserves in the sense that they, when they bailed out the banks with the financial crisis back in 2008, Bernanke in particular just flooded the accounts of the private banks at the central bank, which are like their deposit accounts. They call those reserves, in the belief that this is the failure of the Federal Reserve to do that back in the 1930s was, according to Bernanke, the reason why the Great Depression occurred. So as soon as the crisis hit, he just hit them with trillions of dollars pumped into the reserve accounts. Now, according to conventional economic theory, and Obama, not quite as embarrassing as anything Bill Clinton did with a cigar, but in 2009, Obama came out saying that putting reserves into the banks will generate 10 times as much money in the real economy. Hmm. And that's why you should put the reserves inside the accounts. And the theory that conventional economists have is that if you put reserves, say put $1 trillion worth of reserves into the private banks, so that's money that sits in the deposit accounts, if you like, of the private banks at the central bank, where that's a liability, the central bank, down on their own books, that becomes an asset. And then the belief that conventional economic theory still teaches students all over the world is that that money will then rent out. They'll hang onto a fraction of it, you know, they'll hang on $100 billion worth of it and lend out $900 billion and then onto $810 and so on. And over a chain reaction, $10 trillion, if the banks hang on to 10% at each stage, well, that $1 trillion generates $10 trillion of additional lending into the real economy. Now, it's simply, that is actually about as realistic as saying that I'm going to go for a swim now and I'm going to breathe water.
Okay.
It is.
But
it
there,
is simply,
I mean, there is some truth to the old fashioned notion that banks use their reserves. I mean, it used to be that.
No, it's not. It's false. It's completely false. It's completely false. The reason being that reserves are an asset of the bank. And if you want to increase if the bank wants to lend, then it increases its assets. And to increase its assets, its liabilities also rise by the same amount. So the bank, if a bank lends you $1 million, its assets rise by $1 million, and its liabilities, which include your deposit account, also rise by $1 million. So to lend money involves assets rising. Now, people say lend out reserves. That the language gives it away. That's a negative. You get this, you got $1 million in reserves, you lend it out, so your assets fall. I'm sorry, on the other side, your liabilities have to fall as well. You cannot lend from reserves. It's simply false. It's bad. Huh. It's bad accounting, underlying bad economics.
Well, what about the old, I mean, you know, what I learned in basically high school econ, I mean, you know, kind of the first thing was that banks take my money in my savings account and at least use that as the fractional basis for lending out money to somebody for their mortgage for their house. Is that not true?
That's completely wrong. That's completely wrong. It's been a myth. Think about it. Imagine that actually happened. Tom Hartman puts, let's say, $1,000 into his bank account, and the bank goes and lends it out after Tom's made his deposit. Tom goes back to the auto bank to pull out the money and find that rather than the $1,000 he put in, he's only got $100 because the bank's lent out the other $900.
Uh-huh.
You'd be freaking, okay? That doesn't happen. It's simply a myth. So what happens is the bank actually, if the bank lends you $1 million, your deposit account goes up by $1 million and your debt to the bank goes up by the same amount.
And the bank has just created into being out of thin air $1 million, right?
Yeah.
Or arguably
the
two?
The bank's reserves play no role in that action. What the bank reserves are there for fundamentally, and you can find this in a paper by a guy called O'Brien from the Federal Reserve back in 2007, the fundamental reason that reserves ratios actually exist is so that if the public freaks out about some bank becoming vulnerable and the household sector runs up to the road and says, we want our money out, the banks will have 10% of the holdings of the household sector will be there as cash reserves in case they panic. And that 10% should be enough that in one day it doesn't run dry. And in the meantime, the Fed can put a couple of trucks worth of cash towards that bank and stop the
run. So it's designed to stop runs on the banks.
It's just a backup. And what the reserves actually do, the real function they have, is for transfers between banks initiated by transfers between individuals or bank with different banks. So again, if you wanted to buy my nice little microphone off me here, and sent me the money for it from your bank in America to my bank in England, that would involve, as well as you, for you to put money into my account, there would need to be a transfer of reserves from your bank to my bank. That's what reserves are there for.
I see.
They're to facilitate transfers. They have nothing to do with lending. Now, that is, I've just taught you something that the PhD economists running central banks don't understand unless they work at the Bank of England, which is one bank which has acknowledged that in a brilliant paper, 2014, called Money Creation in the Modern Economy, saying exactly what I'm saying, but not as forcefully. It's a myth to say that reserves are involved in lending.
So let me I can recap, Steve, because we're running out of time here. We're talking with Professor Steve Keen, head of the School of Economics, Politics, and History at Kingston University in London. So we had basically a freeze up, a seizure in capitalism and in the banking sector. And in order to try to get the banks to lend money to people so that people would take that borrowed money and engage in economic activity and reboot the economy, the idea was of both first the Bush administration, then the Obama administration, and frankly, the idea of central bankers all over the world was pour the money into the banks, and the banks, out of the largeness of their heart and out of good business practices, will turn around and lend that money out and make money on lending the money, and won't that be wonderful, and that'll reboot the economy. But the reality is that they don't lend that money out, that in fact they're taking those reserves and sitting on them and making money on them, and it's not helping at all, and that the real problem here is that the legislatures of these various countries have not been stimulating their economies by injecting money at the bottom of the economy like FDR did, where, you know, with the WPA and the CCC putting people to work. And, you know, I mean, John Maynard Keynes said you hire one guy to dig a hole, you hire another guy to fill it. And it seems silly, but it actually generates economic activity that then stimulates the economy. And pretty soon those guys aren't filling holes. Pretty soon they're making products to meet consumer demand. Do I have that right?
You do. I mean, basically, if you wanted to stimulate the economy, the reserve, the central bank should be putting money into your bank account and my bank account, not into the reserves. They've got to do it directly, which I call people's quantitative easing and also a modern debt jubilee.
Well, that's what FDR did with mortgages in the 30s, didn't he? He bought all the private mortgages from the banks and said, okay, you now have, instead of a 5-year balloon payment to the bank, you've got a 30-year payment with a lower interest rate to the federal government. And that got wound up in 64, I think it was.
That's what we should have done. We didn't do that. There was actually a facility to enable that in the Obama policies, but they were never enacted. I think about less than 1,000 mortgages were given that sort of rescue this time around versus tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of mortgages back in the 1930s.
But
the negative interest rates, just to finish on that point, the negative interest rates are being applied to those massive reserves by central bankers who didn't understand what you and I've just discussed in the last few minutes. So they think by making the rates negative, they can force the banks to lend them out. And it is physically impossible for the banks to do that.
It's not going to work.
It's ludicrously not going to work. What it means is the banks now have assets, so-called, which are actually losing them money. They're paying money up to 0.75%.
Hang on a second, Steve.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We're talking to Professor Steve Keen, the head of the School of Economics, Policy, and History at Kingston University in the UK, debtdeflation.com/blogs. Steve, thanks so much for being with us.